Turn to Proverbs 7 and verse 8. We're going to cover three more verses tonight, Lord willing. We're going through this account, this historical account of what Solomon witnessed from his own house and that he's sharing with his son to teach him a lesson through this story of avoiding the strange woman. In verse 8, it says, "Passing through the street near her corner, and he went the way to her house." So this is the young man that he saw that is out and about when he shouldn't be. And her corner there is the strange woman that he's warning him about. He's looking through his window there in verse 6, and he sees this young foolish man, and he's passing through the street near her corner. And just to start off with, we can see that there is no new thing under the sun. If you turn to Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 9, it's just interesting that the King James Bible is always accurate and up to date. Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 9 says, "The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun." Hookers have been standing on street corners for thousands of years. Isn't that what he said? Passing through the street near her corner. And we still talk about hookers on the corner, on street corners today, 3,000 years later. So Solomon's warning is just as pertinent today as it was in antiquity. Nothing changes. Human nature does not change. And this is where the young man's trouble begins. If he would have never walked down the street near her corner, he would have never been taken by her. So he walks near her corner. Near is an adverb. And when it's used with verbs of motion, like passing through the street near, so it's used with a verb of motion, it means nearer or closer to a place, point, or person. So he's getting in close proximity to this woman's corner. Now, just a practical lesson. If we never get near to where a strange woman hangs out, and that could be the street, right? If you go to certain cities, you would want to stay away from certain parts of the city, certain streets, the red light district, as they would call it. Or that could be the bar. A lot of loose women hang out at bars, and not a good place to find yourself a wife. Or the casino, or the club, right? Or the office party, even, or the frat party. Any of those types of places. If you go near those kind of places where strange women hang out, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to come into contact with them, and you're going to end up going the way to her house, as the rest of the verse says. So the best thing to do is just stay away. If we stay away from places where she frequents, we won't be seduced by her. And that's just a good principle in life in general. Make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. We'll get to that verse in a little bit. So in Proverbs 5:8, you'll remember, Solomon gave his son warning to go not, stay far away from her. Proverbs 5:8 says, "Remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh the door of her house," which is precisely the opposite of what this guy is doing. He's heading right to her corner. He's getting right close up to her. Solomon told us in Proverbs 4:14-15 that we should not enter into the way, into the path of the way that leads to evil. He says, "Enter not into the path of the wicked, and go not in the way of evil men. Avoid it, pass not by it, turn from it, and pass away." So if he wouldn't have passed, look at the words there, passing through the street near her corner, he went the way to her house. And Solomon says, "Avoid it, pass not by it, go not in the path of the wicked, and the way of evil men." So he's using the exact same wording there, which is key to avoiding sin in general, is just staying away from it, especially if it's something you have a weakness to, right? If you were an alcoholic, for instance, stay away from the bar, right? You wouldn't go to a bar, would you, Bev? Right? Because
not unless I was going with a group of people to eat.
Right, right. But you wouldn't go there and sit up at the bar or something, and no, it's just foolish. Sit next to somebody that's having a drink and start talking, you wouldn't do that, right?
No.
And that just makes good sense. So anybody that has any kind of a weakness with anything, just stay away from it. Jay Adams, in Competent to Counsel, he said, "To keep from falling over the edge of a precipice, one should move as far back from that edge as possible." And I think that's just good, sound advice. I remember being at the Grand Canyon and seeing those warning signs, and you'd see a picture of a guy, like the rock kind of comes out from under his foot and he's falling down into the canyon because he was standing too close to the edge. And that just kind of reminds me of a spiritual lesson. Just don't get so close to the edge. There's no reason to walk right up and be, you know, right. If God says right here is the line that you absolutely cannot cross, you know, to stand there and then kind of look over the edge of the line just to see, that's just not wise.
Yeah, and you don't need to check out the price of the alcohol or the price of the hooker either.
Hey, right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to try to convert her to Jesus or convert the drunks at the bar or something like that, some foolishness. That's just a good way of ending up.
If you try to save them, you're going to lose yourself.
Exactly. Romans 13 and verse 14 is what I made mention of here a minute ago, which is a good verse to remember. He says, "But put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lusts thereof." If you make provision for the flesh, like if you give the flesh the opportunity to fulfill its lusts, you'll end up doing it. Instead, put on the Lord Jesus Christ. Take his yoke upon you. Learn of him. If you put him on, he's your covering. He's your protection. Live by his commandments, in other words. In Psalm 119, 101, the psalmist said that we should refrain our feet from every evil way. Psalm 119 and verse 101. It says, "I have refrained my feet from every evil way that I might keep thy word." It's far easier to avoid sin than it is to fight free from its grasp. And I'll say that again. It's far easier to avoid sin than it is to fight free from its grasp. And I think anybody knows that. It's really hard to break a bad habit. It's not hard to not start a bad habit. But once you get entrenched in that, it's really hard to get out of it. Ben Franklin, the father of our country, one of the fathers of our country, and the father of those convenience stores of a generation ago. Right, Judy?
Yes.
He said, "An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure." Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of truth in that with medicine or other things. And then it says, "And he went the way to her house." So he passed through the street near her corner, and he went the way to her house. So having begun walking down the road near the whore's corner, going the rest of the way to her house is practically inevitable. Because once you start that first step, you break down that barrier, whatever that might be. And when you break down that barrier, it's really easy to just continue on. And I think in some cases it's a psychological thing. Once you've taken that first step, then you're like, well, I'm kind of already here, right? I've already blew it now. I may as well. Why not? You know, and that's super dangerous, because then you're in the realm of presumptuous sins where you're doing it intentionally and just thinking, well, God will have mercy on me. Well, he might not, because you're doing it on purpose. This is kind of like getting in a rut. Like if you're driving and you get in a rut, it's really hard to get out of the rut. I mean, you turn your wheels, you know, turn them 90 degrees almost, and sometimes you can't even get out of the rut. You're just going to continue to go in the tracks that you're in. And that's what happens with him. When he starts down the road toward her corner, he's in a rut now, and short of somebody just grabbing him and smacking upside the head, he's probably just going to continue right on down, and that's exactly what he does. Once he got near her, then she's able to seduce him with sexual advances and with flattery. Verse 13, we'll get into this verse later, it says, "So she caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said unto him." Now, at that point, she's going to be pretty hard to resist. But if you were never near her corner and never even saw her, that would have never happened. And then she starts laying on the flattery in verses 14 through 21. She says, "I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. Therefore came I forth to meet thee diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. And I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works, with fine linen of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves. For the goodman is not at home. He has gone a long journey. He hath taken a bag of money with him, and will come home at the day appointed. With her much fair speech, she caused him to yield with a flattering of her lips. She forced him." But she would have never been able to do that if he wouldn't have been close enough to her to even communicate with her, if he wouldn't have even been in the general area to see her and then be interested and enticed to get close, right? So it's that first step is so important, just to stay off the path in the first place. But at this point now, he's followed her like an ignorant ox going to the slaughter, straight to her house, leading to the paths of death, to the chambers of death, verse 22 and 27. He goeth after her straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter, and as a fool to the correction of the stocks. And then 27, her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. But it all started, and this is my whole point in this verse, it all started with going down the path, going down the street near her house, near her corner. Just stay off the street, you got nothing to worry about. And we'll go on to verse 9. Turn to Proverbs 7, 9. So this is talking about the young man that is passing through the street near her corner, and he went the way to her house. Verse 9, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. So verse 8 shows us that he was in the wrong place. Now we see he's in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that's a deadly combination. Wrong place, wrong time. That's where a lot of people get themselves in trouble or get themselves injured or hurt or killed. Wrong place, wrong time. If it's dark out, chances are you should be home. If you are at home when it's dark, you're going to be a lot safer. If you're out running around on the streets when it's dark, you're increasing your chances of being harmed or getting into trouble. So in the twilight. Twilight is the light diffused by the reflection of the sun's rays from the atmosphere before sunrise and after sunset, the period during which this prevails between daylight and darkness. Specifically, it's the most commonly applied to the evening twilight from sunset to dark night, which is the second twilight. So twilight can refer to dawn, just before the sun comes up, or dusk, just after the sun goes down. It can refer to either one. Most of the time, it's referring to dusk, between the sun going down and it getting dark. Now, when the sun goes down, the young man has finished his day of work. I'm assuming back in those days, there was no night shift, I don't think, for hardly any profession. Probably when it was dark, there's no electricity, you go home, right? That's where you should be. So he's off work. He should be home. Idle hands, though, are the devil's workshop, as they say. And he takes a walk near the harlot's corner. That was his first mistake. The harlot has been waiting all day for the twilight so that she can commit adultery unnoticed. Job 24 and verse 15. Now, maybe he was totally innocently walking down the street near her corner. I don't know. It doesn't say. It's certainly possible he was just out for a stroll because he just had nothing better to do, and then he gets seduced by a harlot. Or it's altogether possible that he knew where the harlots hang out, and he was going there for a purpose. Maybe he wanted to do some evangelism, share a tract with her or something to see if he could get her saved. Job 24 and verse 15. Says, the eye also of the adulterer waiteth for the twilight, saying, no eye shall see me, and disguiseth his face. And the same thing works for the female, for the hooker. She waits for the twilight because nobody's going to see her face, right? It's dark out, or it's getting very close to being dark. In the twilight, in the evening, so now it's getting a little bit later. Evening is the coming of even, the process or fact of growing dusk, the time at which this takes place, the time about sunset. And then it says it's merged with number two. Number two is a synonym of even, which it is now superseded in ordinary use. It means the close of the day, usually the time from about sunset till bedtime. And that's how we use the term today, the evening, right? When the sun goes down until you go to bed, we consider that the evening. So it's now close to being dark, and the harlot is heading to work wearing her uniform. Proverbs 7 and verse 10. Because, you know, most professions have a uniform of some kind. I mean, lawyers even have a uniform. It's called a suit, right? They wear suits every day. they think they're so special, but all they're doing is wearing a uniform, right? They're just a different looking uniform than the guy that works at 7-Eleven has on. Proverbs 7 and verse 10, "And behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart." So she's got her slutty looking attire on, which is her uniform, and we'll talk about that probably next. No, we'll talk about that today, as a matter of fact. We'll talk about that next, this evening. Now, he should be at home eating with family or resting or preparing for tomorrow, right? I don't know if he's a young man, so maybe he's not married, but if he's not married, chances are he's probably living with his family still. So he should be at home with the family and, you know, doing something wholesome or resting or getting ready for the next day. But instead, he is going to the wrong place at a bad time. And then, he's a young man, yes, yep. So, and, you know, and as we saw there, a young man could be anything from a teenager up into his early 20s. Yeah, so, you know, who knows? He's likely not married, I would guess, but, you know, we don't really know. And then in the black and dark night, so in the twilight and the evening, in the black and dark night. Night is the period of darkness which intervenes between day and day, that part of the natural day of 24 hours during which no light is received from the sun, the time between evening and morning. So it's now dark, and sinning potential is at its apex because scrutiny from others is at its lowest. That's usually when sin takes place, is when it is not observed, right? So the time and the place that has the least amount of eyes on it are the places that are most fertile for sin. It just makes sense, because most people are ashamed of it, or they at least don't want to get caught and get in trouble. So he waits until the night, or she waits until the night. And this is the case with sin. It usually takes place at night. Of course, not always, but a lot of times it does, especially certain types of sins. Like 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 7. People that get drunken typically get drunken in the night. People that get drunken in the day are called alcoholics. But partiers typically get drunk at night. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 7. It says, "For they that sleep, sleep in the night, and they that be drunken are drunken in the night." So stay away from places and people that like to hang out at night. The older you get, I think this is probably almost universally so, the older you get, the less time you spend away from your house at night, right? Or at least if you are, you're doing something worthwhile and you're not out hanging out and running around with people, especially late at night. Job 24, 16 through 17. I've always said that I've thought that I was born too late. Like feel like I'm a lot older than I am. And I remember years and years ago. Well, it depends. When you say years and years, if you're your age, that means like 40 years ago. If you're my age, it means like, you know, 15 years ago. But anyway, years ago, I was probably in my mid 20s, and I was a Friday night, and it was 8 o'clock at night, and I was just sitting there by myself reading or studying or something. And it just dawned on me, like, I'm the biggest loser ever. Like, here I am.
That's
when,
so boring. Yeah,
when all of my friends are, if I had any, I didn't have any friends anymore at that point, or no friends that I used to have, but all the people my age that I used to hang out with on a Friday night at 8 o'clock are definitely going out somewhere, and they're going to be out for many, many hours. And here I am sitting at home by myself reading, and it just dawned on me what a loser I was. And I say that. I didn't really think I was a loser, but in the world's eyes, I would be.
How old were you?
Oh, it was after I got home from overseas, so probably 24, 25, something. Yeah, probably about 25, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I've been accused of just of existing and not living by some family members, but they may consider it existing. I don't consider it just merely existing, but anyway. Proverbs 24,
Job,
there we go, Job 24, 16 through 17. It says, this is right after the verse about the adulterer waiting for the twilight. Verse 16, in the dark they dig through houses, which they marked for themselves in the daytime. They know not the light. For the morning is to them even as the shadow of death. If one know them, they are in the terrors of the shadow of death. So these types, they live for the night. And if they're out in the daytime, it's only because they're scouting out the houses that they're going to ransack and pillage at night. They do all their devilment under the guise of darkness. And for most of us, you know, we look forward to the morning, look forward to the light. They dread the morning coming because they have to wait a whole other, yeah, that's a funny saying, a whole other 12 hours to start their work again when it gets dark. Now, the thing is, sex also generally happens at night. Job 3 and verse 3. Like I said, the Bible is so accurate. Job 3 and verse 3. Job said, let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said, there is a man-child conceived. That's usually when conception happens, is at night. So, regular wholesome sex happens at night, but sinful sex probably almost always does, because, you know, generally you're waiting till after work, running around with some woman somewhere, and that's generally how that happens, and not wanting to get caught. And then the scripture backs this up too, Romans 13 and verse 13. Romans 13:13. It says, let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting or drunkenness, not in chambering or and wantonness, not in strife and envying. So he says, let us walk as in the day, which is the opposite, of course, of the night. So these things that happen here that he lists happen at night. Rioting, right now, Minneapolis, you know, my old neighborhood. I don't know if you've heard, you've been watching the news, or all right next to my old neighborhood. Yeah, just minutes from where I used to live in Brooklyn Center. Riots going on now, three nights in a row from that.
Aren't you glad you got out of there?
I am glad I got out of there. Yeah, that's crazy. And the reason for the riots, I don't know if you've been following that or not. Mm-hmm. The female cop pulled this kid over. Now, he shouldn't have been resisting arrest. And if he wouldn't have been resisting arrest, he wouldn't be dead now. So he's an idiot. But anyway, he starts resisting arrest. She pulls out her sidearm, thinking it's her taser, and tells him she's going to tase him, and then shoots him and kills him. And she's like, oh, shoot.
If you watch the video, it's clear that she...
Oh, yeah, I saw the video, yeah.
Yeah.
With a single shot, she killed
him. Yeah. And so anyway, she's fired, as she should be. I mean, that is gross negligence.
They charged her today.
Yeah, second-degree manslaughter, I think it was.
With...
Yeah. As she should be. I mean, she's a 26-year veteran, too. It wasn't like she was
26 years?
Yeah.
Doesn't know the difference between a taser and
I mean, how can you be that incompetent? I can see heat of the moment and all that, but still, certainly.
They don't even feel the same in your hand when you pick it up.
No, and they don't. I mean, they don't look the same. A taser's great big, and it's yellow, and I just don't. And it's on the other side of the belt. Like, how in the world that happened? I have no idea. But
that's why you shouldn't have women in the police.
Right, you're right, exactly. There should not be women in police. That's crazy. But anyway. But the point is, the rioting up there is happening at night. It doesn't happen during the day. As soon as dusk comes, though, the rioters come out. Rioting, drunkenness happens at night, and chambering and wantonness happens at night.
Bad people show up.
Yep. And not to mention, that's happening at the same time that the Derek Chauvin's trial is going to be over. Like, I think is over, and it's that they're expecting a decision next week. And I can think of about a million other cities that I'd rather live in than Minneapolis right at this time. But anyway.
Pretty much all of them except San Francisco.
Yeah, right, right. That's about it.
Are you glad you're down here?
I am. I wouldn't want to be up there. Anyway, chambering is the furnishing of a room, which is not what it's referring to. It's sexual indulgence, lewdness, luxury, effeminacy. Chambering, effeminacy, that's what it says, yeah. I've never heard of that either. But, I mean, it makes sense. Chambering, like if a chamber is a room, and if you're going into a room, you're going in there for a reason, right, for sexual indulgence. wantonness. You said chambering and wantonness. Wantonness is the quality of being wanton in various senses. It's lasciviousness or unchastity. Lasciviousness is the quality of being lascivious, and lascivious is inclined to lust, lewd, wanton. So chambering and wantonness are referring to fornication, adultery, and sexual sin, such as that.
Maybe chambering has something to do with being in the closet, like when a homosexual is in the closet, she's in the chamber doing his stuff.
Could be. Right. I don't think it's limited to that, but yeah.
But I'm just assuming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it certainly could apply.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good thought.
I wish they would stay in the closet. Yeah. Now, here's a contrast for you. The virtuous woman stays up after dark, but she does it for a reason. And she rises early in the morning while it's yet night, but she does it for a reason. It's to make clothes and cook food for her family. Look at Proverbs 31 and verse 18. Proverbs 31:18. I'm going to show you a stark contrast between the strange woman and the virtuous woman. Proverbs 31:18. Says, she perceiveth that her merchandise is good, her candle goeth not out by night. So yes, she's awake, she's up at night, she's working at night, but she's not working the same kind of work that the strange woman's working. This woman is working for her family, she's making clothes for her family to take care of them.
She's working in her home.
Yes, she's
working outside of her home to bring people home.
Exactly, yes. That's exactly right. Proverbs 31 and verse 15. So she riseth also while it is yet night, and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. So yeah, she's working at home for her family. The strange woman is out at night away from her family, fulfilling her lusts. Proverbs 7:11 through 12. She is loud and stubborn, her feet abide not in her house. Now is she without, now in the streets, and lieth in wait at every corner. So big difference there. Being away from the home, fulfilling your lust, versus being in the home, taking care of your family. So that takes care of Proverbs 7 and verse 9. Turn to Proverbs 7 and verse 10. This will be the last one for tonight. It says, and behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart. So let's just start out with those first two words, and behold. Behold is the imperative of the preceding verb used to call attention. So Solomon is calling attention to the situation. And behold, so pay attention, look what I'm about ready to tell you about. He's calling his son's attention to one of the most obvious indicators that a woman is a whore, and that is her clothing. That is probably the number one giveaway that a woman is a whore, is how she dresses. You do not generally see whores dressed in a nice, modest dress or something like that. That doesn't happen. They are dressed to allure. It says, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot. Attire is equipment of man or horse, outfit for war. Now you might say, well, that's ridiculous. That doesn't make sense. She's not outfitted for war. Well, you know what it says at the end of the chapter? It says she's cast down many wounded, many strong men are slain by her. She is ready for war. Secondly, though, it's personal adornment or decoration, get up. Also with the plural, an ornament. And then three, it's dress or apparel. So it's referring to what she's wearing, her clothing, in other words. And her clothing is her battle clothing as well, because she is out to slay her some men. It says she has the attire of an harlot. A harlot, this is interesting too, number one. I like to give you number one if I use a different one, just to show you why I'm using a different one. It is a vagabond, beggar, rogue, rascal, villain, low fellow, knave. In later use, in the 16th and 17th centuries, sometimes a man of loose life, a fornicator, also often a mere term of opprobrium or insult. So it's interesting, a harlot, primarily, number one, doesn't even refer to a woman. It's used in the scripture, referring to women, frequently, and the dictionary will show that too. But number five, it's applied to a woman, which is the context here. It's a general term of execration, specifically an unchaste woman, a prostitute, a strumpet. Then it says very frequently in 16th century Bible versions where Wycliffe had whore. It's probably a less offensive word, it says. So, that according to the dictionary anyway. But other versions use the word whore, but whore and harlot are synonyms. They're the same thing. So she's got the attire of an harlot, which is a prostitute. And prostitutes wear revealing, sexually provocative clothing. They wear low-cut shirts, which show their cleavage. They wear short shirts, which show their midsection. They wear miniskirts and short shorts, which show their thighs. They wear tight clothing, which shows the contours of their bodies. In other words, prostitutes dress a whole lot like most American women do these days, especially in the summertime. I have a feeling, and I can't prove this because I was not around 3,000 years ago, but I would be willing to bet that the average teenage girl at the mall today in the summertime is probably dressed more like a harlot than harlots were dressed like harlots 3,000 years ago. Okay. I'll bet you they're dressed more revealingly than harlots were 3,000 years ago. I would be willing to bet a sum of money on that. I have a feeling if Paul and the other apostles came here to 21st century America and walked around in a mall in the summertime or anywhere, they would be probably shocked. Although there was a whole lot of wicked sin going on back then, but just the way that people dress today, I'm guessing is probably a lot worse than it was then.
I don't think you would see anything like what you see out in public here, except at one of those banquets like what... the girl asked, the dancing girl asked for John the Baptist's head.
Right.
That's
yeah.
the only place you'd see what we see now.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
out on the streets.
I think you're probably right. So a Christian woman should never wear clothing that shows her cleavage, her belly, her thighs, or clothing that is extremely tight so that all the contours of her body can be clearly seen. That is the attire of an harlot. So men, if you see a woman dressed like this, stay far away from her. Proverbs 5 and verse 8. Remove thy way far from her and come not nigh the door of her house. This is not a good woman. She may look attractive, but a godly man should be looking for a wife, not a woman like that. And just think about it. I realize that the two men here tonight are obviously married, but for any young person that might hear this, and there could be plenty of them out there, if you think about it, if the woman that you are dating now dresses like she does now, is she going to continue to dress like that? Well, probably. After you get married, she's going to dress like she does now. And then who's she going to be attracting? Well, maybe you, but every other man that sees her too. Why would you want to date a girl that dresses in such a way that after you were married, men are going to be staring at her and lusting after her? You know, I certainly wouldn't want to. So what a woman says outwardly reveals what's in her heart. Luke 6 and verse 45. Luke 6 and verse 45. See, what's on the outside expresses, reveals what's on the inside. Luke 6, 45, Jesus said, "A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil, for of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh." So what a person says tells you what's in their heart. Well, what a woman wears also tells you what's in her heart. Because if she has godliness in her heart, she's going to want to dress the way that the Bible says she should dress. She's going to want to be modestly clothed. And if she's not, that means that she has, at best, foolishness in her heart, and at worst, just outright sinfulness. Like, she's trying to attract men by dressing like that. A godly submissive woman with a meek and quiet spirit wears modest clothing, which doesn't draw attention to herself. 1 Peter 3, 2 through 6. This is the difference between the godly woman and the strange woman. The type of work she does, the type of clothes she wears, the type of things she says, which we'll get into the things that she says later in this study. All these things are indicative of a strange woman. 1 Peter 3, 2 through 6. It says, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, he's writing to Christian women, whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair, that's like braiding the hair, or of wearing of gold, or of putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner also the old, in the old time, the holy women also, who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well and are not afraid with any amazement. How far did I want to read? Yeah, just to verse 6. Okay. So godly women are adorned in two different ways. They're adorned spiritually with a meek and quiet spirit. They're not loud and stubborn like the strange woman in Proverbs chapter 7. They're not unsubmissive and unruly and telling their husband how it's going to be and back-talking him and just being contrary to him all the time, especially in front of other people. That's not a godly woman. Now, a godly woman can express disagreement with her husband, but there's a big difference between that and being mouthy. That's not what a godly woman is like. And then secondly, a godly woman also adorns herself with modest apparel, and I'll get to that verse in a minute. This verse is not saying that you can never braid your hair or that you can never wear gold, never wear jewelry or anything, because it also says, or of putting on of apparel. So if you're going to forbid all wearing of gold, all braiding of hair, you're going to forbid all putting on of clothing, and that's going to be a problem. So, but it is referring to that a woman's adorning primarily, she shouldn't be all about her outward appearance. So it shouldn't be all about wearing flashy and showy and very, you know, clothing that, even if it's not immodest, that is going to attract the looks of everybody and have them gawk at her. And she shouldn't be just all about her looks, like a lot of, especially younger girls are, right? They're all the makeup, all the braided hair, all the, everything is done so that people will look at them and be, it'll feed their ego, their pride, basically. That's not what a godly woman should be. An ungodly, unchaste, loud, stubborn woman dresses immodestly to draw attention to herself. Remember Proverbs 7, 10 through 11, that he met her, there met him there a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart. And then the next verse, in verse 11, says she is loud and stubborn, her feet abide not in her house. So it's interesting there that these two things go together and they're opposites. Loud and stubborn, and the attire of an harlot. Meek and quiet spirit, and adorned in modest apparel. So chances are when you find one, you're going to find the other. You find a loud and stubborn woman, chances are she's probably wearing clothing that she shouldn't, and it's going to be immodest, and it's going to be drawing attention to her body parts. You find a woman of a meek and quiet spirit, chances are she's not going to be, her boobs aren't going to be hanging out, and you're not going to see the bottom of her butt cheeks, because she's wearing shorts that are so short and things like that. And pretty much see what's going on inside of her heart by what she's clothed by. Now, if a woman dresses immodestly, showing cleavage, thighs, etc., then there's a high likelihood that she's not a godly woman. She could just be deceived, grew up in this culture, doesn't know any different. That's quite possible. But there's a pretty good likelihood that she's probably not a godly woman. Like I alluded to, Christian women should be adorned in modest apparel. 1 Timothy 2 and verse 9. Paul says, in like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broided hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but as women professing godliness with good works. Same exact thing that Peter was saying there. These are basically parallel texts. Modest, when we're speaking of women, their attributes and behavior, it's governed by the proprieties of the sex, decorous in manner and conduct, not forward, impudent, or lewd. Remember the strange woman? A few verses later it says, and with an impudent face she said unto him, I have peace offerings with me, so on. Modest is not forward, not impudent. The strange woman was forward. She runs right up to him and she starts talking. She starts throwing herself at him. That's not what a modest woman does. At least not to a stranger. You know, within marriage, that's perfectly fine. But not to a stranger. Hence, in latter use, also of men, scrupulously chaste in feeling, language, and conduct, shrinking from coarse or impure suggestion. Now, a female attire, which is what Paul is referring to here, modest apparel, it is decent, not meretricious. Meretricious is of, pertaining to, characteristic of, or befitting a harlot, having the characteristic of a harlot. So in other words, women are not to be ordained in clothing that a harlot would wear, which is what I already mentioned earlier, showing cleavage, skin, basically. Skin anywhere from, you know, your chest above the breast down to your knees. When you're showing that skin, you're adorning yourself like a harlot. So therefore, Christian women should not be dressed like a harlot, obviously, which is what the verse says. It says that she had the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart. Subtle is of thin consistency, tenuous, not dense, rarefied, hence penetrating, pervasive, or elusive by reason of tenuity, now chiefly of odors. Now, there's a reason, once again, I gave you that definition, because that's referring to a physical definition, like if an odor is of a thin consistency, or I think of, that just reminds me of WD-40, right? WD-40 would be subtle. It's a thin consistency, it gets easily down, and it penetrates down inside cracks and crevices, and it's very pervasive and elusive. A strange woman is like that in a immaterial sense. Of immaterial things, it's not easily grasped, understood, or perceived, intricate, obtruse. Now, strange woman is like that. It says that her ways are movable, that thou canst not know them. She's not easy to grasp. She's not easy to figure out sometimes. She can put on a pretty good front. Of persons or animals, it's crafty, cunning, treacherously or wickedly cunning, insidiously sly or wily. So she's tricky. She's got tricks up her sleeves. She has language that might make you think that she's something that she's not. Like, I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. She sounds religious. We'll get into that verse later. So she's tricky. She's sly. She's cunning. Not so easy to figure out if you're, I guess if you're dense and you can't see she's dressed like a harlot, and you know, that should be a giveaway, but you know, if you, maybe you're blind or something, her language might not give it away just right away until she starts talking about her bed, and then you probably ought to figure, well, you know, maybe she's not exactly a good woman if she's telling me about her bed in our first conversation. We'll get to that later too. So she's crafty and deceitful like her father, the devil. 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 3. Makes perfect sense. The devil's subtle. Remember, he came in the form of a serpent, and the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field, and the devil deceived Eve through his subtlety. 2 Corinthians 11:3, but I fear lest by any means, as the serpent beguiled Eve through his subtlety, so your minds should be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. The devil's subtle, and here the strange woman, who's a child of the devil, she's subtle too. Tricky, sly, cunning. Like I said, Proverbs 5:6 says, her ways are immovable that thou canst not know them. Her heart is full of snares and nets, which she uses to catch unsuspecting men. Look at Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 26. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 26. Sorry, it's taking me a second. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 26. Solomon said, and I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, and her hands as bands. Whoso pleaseth God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be taken by her. See, she's elusive. She's not easy to identify. She's crafty, wickedly cunning, insidiously sly. She's wily. She can catch you. Her hands or her heart is snares and nets. Like she's got traps set for you that you don't see. That's the whole idea of a snare and a net, right? They're set and they're hidden. She's got a hidden agenda. She's ready to catch you, to trick you, to snare you, to take you and destroy you. And a wise man will stay far away from her. Proverbs 7:24-27. Hearken unto me now, therefore, O ye children, and attend to the words of my mouth. Let not thine heart decline to her ways. Go not astray in her paths. For she hath cast down many wounded, yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her way, her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. So the best way to deal with her is the same way you deal with the devil, to avoid him, to stay away from him, to resist the devil and he'll flee from you, right? Do the same thing with a strange woman. Stay away from her and you won't be deceived by her. So next time we'll look at Proverbs 7 and verse 11. Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.